Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks. Today's program is brought to you as a public service by DestinationDelco.com. Just to the east of us, you can find the wonders of Delaware County and the Brandywine Valley, and by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, where buying a car is always worry-free. I'll be back to introduce my guest, Dorothy Krupa, of the DCNR, or better known as Shawnee State Park, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
DestinationDelco.com, a new way to experience Delaware County. From Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. Five different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks, brought to you by DestinationDelco.com. Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., just before Rush, on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Wouldn't it be cool to have a backyard that's 4,000 acres? Well, you do, and it's right here in your backyard. It's called Shawnee State Park, and I am thrilled to be with Dorothy Krupa, who is the head woman of Shawnee State Park. And she is here representing the park and DCNR, and I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. I met Dorothy recently at a meeting in Bedford, and it was just a delight to meet her and hear about her career, but I really want to hear about this park. Dorothy, I have been to this park on a number of occasions when my wife and I first moved here. It was the very first place we saw in Bedford County. So you were number one. We saw your place first. So anyway, welcome, and thanks a lot for coming. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Lloyd. It's my pleasure.
You're a park manager. You've obviously been doing this for some years. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about Dorothy. How did you get into this?
Well, I actually credit my dad. It kind of goes back to my childhood. When you talk to people who make careers in state parks, many of us spent time outdoors as kids. And my dad, we grew up in the country. I grew up in Clearfield County. And my dad took my brother and I outdoors. We went for walks all the time. He took us fishing at Blackmishanna State Park. He was an outdoorsman. He hunted and he fished. So I've learned to enjoy being outdoors. And when I grew up and had to decide what I wanted to do with my life, I looked for ways to get into some kind of outdoor career.
So you obviously had to go to school for this. So did you go to college and study this kind of thing?
I went to Penn State. I actually started after
high
school.
Another Penn Stater. I keep running into you guys all the time.
Always. There's a lot of us in DCNR. I actually, after high school, went into the Air Force. I spent 4.5 years in the Air Force as a law enforcement specialist. And when I came back home to Pennsylvania, I did go to Penn State, and I got a bachelor's degree in wildlife science. And when I was looking for work after my college career ended, I actually saw ad in the employment section of the newspaper for park rangers. And I took the civil service test for park ranger, and I've continued on with the career. I was a seasonal park ranger. Many of our employees in state parks, because we, as you'd expect, get most of our visitors in the summer, in the warmer season of the year, we have seasonal staff. We beef up the staff and have more people working in the summer. So I started out as a seasonal park ranger at Canoe Creek State Park in the Altoona-Hollidaysburg area. And I worked for several seasons as a seasonal employee, and I really liked working for state parks and wanted to stay with it. So I then switched into the manager series and got full-time, and I've been a park manager now for about 16 years.
That is great. I can tell you I've been to several of the parks around the Commonwealth. I owned a business once that had some radio stations throughout the northeastern portion of the United States, Lackawanna County and Pike County, where else was it? Luzerne County, Cumberland County. Yeah. And the park system in Pennsylvania, I think, is really quite extraordinary. You expect to be these grandiose things like national parks, but Pennsylvania has its own feel and look to it. And it's really interesting what you folks have done with these parks.
It does. And that credit goes back to some of the early people early on in the park system and the history of the park. We currently have 120 state parks and conservation areas in Pennsylvania. And at one time the goal, and I believe it was when I don't want to get this wrong, but it might have been Governor Pinchot, was to have a park within 25 miles of every Pennsylvania citizen. And we're very close to that. Huh. Yeah.
I didn't know that about him. I know about Gifford Pinchot. I read about him. Yeah. And he was famous for when he was running for office. He said he'd get the farmers out of the mud. He built a lot of roads.
Yeah.
And I also know about a man named Rothrock.
Yes.
Because I saw a marker from Mr. Rothrock in the town I just came from in Westchester. They have a great big marker right smack in the middle of the borough. He either lived there. I don't think he was from there, but he must have lived there for a while. And they put a marker up about him.
Yeah.
And he was had a lot to
forestry.
Do with the beginning of these forestry here.
He did.
Right?
Yeah. He did. Yeah, I believe our agency at first was Department of Forest and Waters when it was first developed.
Right. Tell me a little bit about what the qualifications of the people that work here. For example, are you a forester yourself, or is there some discipline that you have to work in these environments?
Within DCNR, we have the Bureau of Forestry, where many of the staff in the Bureau of Forestry have a background in forestry.
Right.
And in parks, to be a park manager, a lot of our managers have degrees in parks and recreation, or like myself, wildlife science, some sort of outdoor recreation,
right.
Natural resource-based education.
So the kids, when they see one of your employees, are they park rangers?
Some are.
Some are. Okay.
To run a park, Lloyd, we have a variety of staff on the park. We do have park rangers, and we actually have two different types of park ranger. The one ranger is called a DCNR ranger, and they're actually law enforcement officers.
Ah,
so
okay.
Our DCNR rangers need an understanding of the same crimes code and vehicle code statutes that a state trooper would need, but they also need to know fish and game laws.
Right.
They need to know the park rules and regulations, because of working in a park, people expect our staff to know almost everything. They come up to us and we'll tell you what kind of bird they saw or what kind of snake they saw, and hope that you can tell them what it is. We have a park naturalist, another employee that we have in the park system. Call them park naturalists, but some of them are environmental interpretive technicians and some are environmental education specialists. But we have a park naturalist here at Shawnee who does programs, and he'll do one on spiders.
Oh.
And it's actually, I've gone to it, and I can't say I like spiders, but I appreciate them a lot more after his program when I realize what benefit they are and how the majority of spiders are beneficial to us.
Well, don't you think, though, that the big thing you do here is you introduce, especially young people, to things that would never otherwise see? I mean,
yes.
Especially if they live in urban environments. They've never seen a groundhog. They've probably never seen a bird in flight like here that you do here.
It is. Just to come out and see the wildlife that's in the park, just to see deer, or if you're fortunate enough to see a bear, you would be surprised how many people have never actually seen a bear in the wild. Grown-ups, because you just don't see them when you live in town, and it is the highlight of their stay if they get to see an animal that they haven't seen before.
I would agree. Most people have never seen a bear. I mean, if you live in the suburban areas of Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, I guarantee you there's no bears.
No.
At least not anymore.
Not there, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is good. But
right.
It's
not good for the bear either.
No, not good for any of them. But we have bears. We have bears at both Shawnee and Blue Knob State Parks. Hmm. And again, that's an animal that for the most part is benign. You know, they're oftentimes feared, and mostly unnecessarily so. You just need to use, and we try to teach our visitors too, just the common sense and the way to respect the wildlife in their own home, because the wildlife live in the park. So they're home.
This is their home, right?
This is their home.
Our guest is Dorothy Krupa. She is the manager of the Shawnee State Park right here in Shellsburg, just off of Route 30. And if you have never been to this park, and I just am astonished if you've never been here, but if you've never been here, you've got to come see it. I wasn't kidding about the 4,000 acres. I'm just a few acres shy, right?
There
it's
are,
like 39 something.
There are. Yeah. There's just about 4,000 acres here. Mm. And we have a 450-acre lake, which is good fishing for walleyes, bass. There's some nice bass in the lake, some nice channel catfish. Right now, believe it or not, even though it's December, we've got some guys down there fishing for crappies, and they're doing pretty good. So it's a nice place
to fish. It's a wonderful lake, and I've paddled around it in my official Shawnee Park rented canoe, and it's been a lot of fun. This program today is brought to you in part by the Bedford County Chamber of Commerce, which proudly supports and celebrates the business community of the Bedford County region. To learn more, visit them online at bedfordcountychamber.com. And as I mentioned, our guest is Dorothy Krupa, and she is an expert in this whole park thing. I want to move on a little bit now and talk to you about how these parks are set up. For example, if I go to Shawnee and get a permit, is there a permit I can get where I can go to all the state parks during the summertime, or is there like an interlinking some kind of thing or work?
Well, state parks, to get into a state park in Pennsylvania, they're free. Okay. There's no cost to the public.
So I don't need anything to do
you
that.
You don't need a permit. Okay. Some parks do charge entrance fees, but Pennsylvania never has. So all parks are free to enter. And also, just so that your listeners know, parks are open all year round. We don't close in the winter. So you can still come out when the weather's nice and take a walk and enjoy visiting your park in the wintertime. And we're also open some of the other activities in the winter when we have snow. Our cross-country skiing or snowshoeing is a nice activity at Blue Knob State Park. You usually do get more snow at Blue Knob. There's downhill skiing at Blue Knob, ice fishing when there's ice on the lake. So we're open 12 months a year. Yeah, we have several pavilions. Actually, most parks, if not all parks, have pavilions that you can rent. If you do rent one, like your family did, we will post it so that it is reserved for you that day. When they're not rented, they're actually first come, first served, and if they're not rented, they're free.
Oh.
Now, Shawnee, I can tell you in summertime weekends, our pavilions are very, very popular.
I'll bet they are.
We get a lot of family reunions, birthday parties, and all kinds of group gatherings at the pavilions, and you can make your reservation. You can either call a toll-free number, or you can go on the DCNR website, and you can get the link to reservations, and you can make a reservation on the web now by yourself.
Our guest is Dorothy Krupa, and when we come back, I'm going to ask her what a yurt is when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. All the way back to Ben Franklin, Americans have known that well-informed decisions save grief, time, and money. At Thomas, we believe it's our job to share everything we know to help you be well-informed about your transportation choices. You're going to save some grief by learning about prudent financing that works in your favor, not ours. You're going to save time with our Real Cash for Your Car policy that accurately determines your trade-in value. And you're going to save money with our upfront and transparent pricing. What's for us is more completely satisfied customers who return for their next car and refer their friends to us. Learn about all of our Thomas 7 Steps to Savings by visiting Thomas Subaru in Bedford now during the Subaru Share the Love event. You'll get a great car, Subaru will donate $250 to selected charities, and best of all, you'll be making a well-informed decision. We think Ben Franklin will be pleased. Thomas Subaru in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years.
This is Larry Fisher of the Bedford Lions Club, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
Welcome back to Bedford County Speaks. Our guest today is Dorothy Krupa. She's been very gracious to talk to us about this marvelous place that's right here in Bedford County, Shawnee State Park. And before we go back to Shawnee, you mentioned to me there is another park in Bedford County, which I didn't realize was in Bedford County.
There are.
It's on a big mountain. Tell me about that.
Blue Knob State Park. And actually, Blue Knob State Park is a complex with Shawnee State Park, which just means that some of our staff work at both places, myself being one of them. I'm the manager for both parks. Blue Knob State Park is a large park land-wise with about 6,000 acres. And it's very different character than Shawnee, because Shawnee, of course, has a lake and rolling hills and some fields and woodlands. And Blue Knob is mostly wooded. It's best known is at the top of the mountain, of course, we have a concessioned operation for the Blue Knob ski area. But Blue Knob also has a very nice 50-site campground that's suitable. It has electric. It's suitable for large campers. Very nice, peaceful area to camp in at Blue Knob. We also have a public swimming pool at Blue Knob, and it's free. It's a small pool. It's is the water at Blue Knob. For those who've swam there in their youth, I can tell you it's the same as it was. It's cold. It might get warm in July, maybe. But the swimming pool is still there. Very nice. It was renovated about a year and a half ago. A very nice swimming pool, open from Memorial Day weekend to Labor Day weekend. If you like to hike, Blue Knob has... of course, it's a mountain, so most of the trails are mountainous terrain. So it really is, like I tell people, if you're going to go up downhill, you're going to go back uphill. So it's more hiking. I tell people, you can take a walk. You can take a nice walk at Shawnee, but you're going to take a nice hike at Blue Knob.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But it's a beautiful park.
Well, the walks at Shawnee are amazing. I've been to Blue Knob, but I don't think I've ever gotten out of my car. In fact, I went there to see the... ski resort on top of the hill.
Yes,
it was more fascinating to me that it used to be an Air Force base. So I was very
interested in seeing
that.
It was an Air Force base,
and they had a big Nike tracking thing up there or something.
Yes, but it was back in the time for the listeners that remember back in the time of the Cold War. It was one of the places where they watched for any attacks coming from the Soviet Union from the 50s up until about 1961, I believe it closed.
Yeah, but it's really really interesting. So it's worth seeing that they have some historical markers up there to talk about that. Okay, so before the break, I promised, I went into the portion of your park, not far from where we're sitting here in your office, and you go across the road, and there's this very unusual-looking building called a yurt. So what is a yurt? What is that word? Where'd it come from?
Oh, I don't know where the word came from, but I do know what a yurt is, fortunately.
Good. Being the park manager, I'm very impressed that you know.
And I answer the question enough. It is a camping structure. It's a structure to camp in. We have we have a campground, about 250 site campground here at Shawnee, that's open from trout season to the traditional rifle deer season. And a yurt, we have two yurts, and they are circular structures with a small deck attached that you camp inside. But when I say camp, I just mean you bring your own bedding or camp sleeping bag to camp inside. The yurts do have beds inside. There's a double bed and three bunk beds, so the yurt sleeps five. The yurt also has a stovetop for cooking. There's electricity in the structure, has a stovetop for cooking, has a refrigerator, has a small table. They do not have indoor plumbing, so they're not
like a
cabin.
This is like a Trump Plaza kind of camping here. What do you mean it's got a stove?
It's upscale camping. It's camping when it's camping when you don't want to sleep on the ground anymore. It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
We have yurts, Lloyd, and we also have three small camping cottages. Now again, a camping cottage is not the same as a cabin. It doesn't have running water and plumbing, but a camping cottage also has the same beds for five that a yurt has, and a camping cottage just has a small table. It does not have the...
Now, you said there's another one that has running water.
Those would be cabins.
Those are cabins.
Now, we have here at Shawnee, we do have a place, a house we call the Shawnee Lodge. It's one of the houses that were purchased with the original purchase of some of the parkland, and the house was converted to a rental. So it's a normal house that was converted to a rental, but we do rent it year-round.
This is one house?
It's one house,
So you can take your family to that one house
for
the period of time you rent it?
Yes, you can, yeah.
But that's reasonable, too.
It is when you compare it to the price of seven nights in a hotel. It's very reasonable. Yeah, and you've got your whole house.
Yeah.
And we have some cabins at Blue Knob that we rent, and we have another house called Twin Fawn House at Blue Knob that we rent.
Now, can I just come out here and camp in the ground in my sleeping bag if I want with a tent?
No, not really.
Not really, okay.
We want you to camp in the campground.
Okay.
Yeah,
but in the campground.
Yes.
Can I pitch a tent in the campground?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. The campsites that we have in the campground are suitable for tent camping. They're suitable, depending on which specific campsite you pick. Many of them are large enough for trailers and motorhomes, but they're all suitable for
So you don't want me up in the woods is what you're saying.
Yeah, correct.
Right, gotcha. Okay.
Correct, yeah.
You'd like to know where I am, right, too.
We do.
Now, I've got a question. I think it'd be interesting in this since you have a background in security. During the summertime, you've got people scattered all over this facility. Is there any kind of security that goes on?
Yes, the park rangers and myself. Mm-hmm. The DCNR rangers are law enforcement officers. They're state park officers. Right. And our park managers, myself, I am also a state park officer. Mm-hmm. So when we're out in the park, we patrol the park. We keep an eye on things. And, you know, obviously the biggest thing, Lloyd, we're actually interested in is people's safety.
Right.
We want people to be safe and enjoy their visit. So those are our primary purpose. But if there's any problems in the park, we'll take care of it.
Right. And there's a ban on alcohol, I understand.
There is. Right. There is. And
good idea. Saves a lot of problems on it.
It does. Yeah. I've started my career, as I said earlier, as a park ranger. And now being a park manager, I have two favorite park rules. The prohibition on alcohol in the park and the park closes at sunset are my two favorite rules. Because it allows us to sometimes stop problems before they get out of hand. And mostly I see it apply a lot. Well, it applies everywhere, but primarily if you're staying in a campground and you've had a long day running around having a good time with your family and you're tired and want to go to sleep, you don't want someone next to you. Right. It's nice to have a party and stay up late, but it's not nice to keep the people up who are sleeping next to you. So it's just a different environment. You know, there's nothing wrong with that in a campground where people expect it, but they don't expect it in a state park. We're a much quieter, more conservative family environment.
Like you, I'm a vet, and I served in the Navy, and I remember some shore patrol friends I had said all bad things happen at night.
Most of them do.
And in the course of that, when you're talking about sailors, this is absolutely true.
And with alcohol.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. So that certainly brings that that particular wisdom to mind. Yeah. Our guest is Dorothy Krupa. She is the manager of the Shawnee State Park. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the way this is organized. We touched on this a little bit earlier, but the DCNR is an entity of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, correct?
Yes.
So could you kind of give us a little bit of an outline of how all that works? I mean, does it start at the governor and down that, is it the Department of the State? Is that how it works?
It does. It's a state agency. And for example, our department secretary, who is currently Cindy Dunn, is appointed by the governor and then approved by the legislature.
Okay.
But so we do. The governor is basically our top boss.
Okay.
We serve, and the Department of Conservation itself is then subdivided into several bureaus. I work for the Bureau of State Parks. There's also a Bureau of Forestry. We have a Bureau of Human Resources, which, of course, then that staff handles all of the human resource personnel, payroll issues for the agency. We have a Bureau of Administration. We have a Bureau of Recreation and Conservation. And they deal statewide with a number of issues such as trails, and providing grants and guidance to communities to improve a variety of recreational facilities.
One of the things I find as a taxpayer in Pennsylvania to be most gratifying is when you come into a state park or these facilities, you can actually see what's going on with your money. And that is not always true with most state agencies. You know, you don't really know what goes on. But you come in here, and you can see buildings and the guys cutting the grass and the paved roads and the little things you put on the trees to identify things and so forth. And it's really a wonderful way to reflect some of the good things that the government does for the populace, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Because you can see it, feel it, and use it. Obviously.
Yes. Yes. You don't have to pay any more to use the state park than what you've already paid in your taxes.
Right.
Unless you want to, for example, reserve a pavilion or you want to rent a campsite. But you can come to this park's 365 days a year, and you don't need to pay us anything more.
Yeah, and that's a nice thing. And I've noticed, too, that I mentioned the things on the trees. You sometimes identify things. I know I walked along one of your trails down here, and they have little signs that identify things, that rocks and trees and, I guess, a species of a particular tree or a plant. And you're obviously it's done deliberately, but is that part of the education component you're talking about here, or is that how that works?
When parks do that, when we do that in parks, it is part of the education, and it is just meant to help people identify what they're looking at. Because the more familiar you are, the more comfortable you are. At least I find that when I'm outdoors. I'm very comfortable outdoors because I know a lot about the plants right. and animals and what's around.
Well, one of the things I've noticed that we had our grandchildren here a couple of years ago. And by the way, it's interesting to note, they're from China. So they've never seen any of this stuff. They live in downtown Hong Kong, which is like living in a rock or a house, you know, compared to what. So we saw these I guess they look like pine trees. They may not be correct in the exact what they are, but they were not far from the lake here. And the trees had great big holes in them. And one of the kids asked one of your staff what the big holes were. And these holes was woodpeckers.
Yes.
And that just knocked me out. Because I've never seen woodpecker damage like that. Is that normal or is it new? Or
It is, and it's the particular species. It's a big enough woodpecker called a pileated woodpecker that can do that.
Mm.
And they'll make a large rectangular hole when basically they're pecking at insect larvae and something in the tree. Yeah.
But that's what they're after, the insects.
Yes.
Does that permanently damage the tree?
It will be a permanent hole in the tree, but it doesn't necessarily harm the tree. The way trees take nutrients and get water, and as long as you don't girdle the bark all the way around a tree, a tree can take a certain amount of damage and recover.
So nature has its way to even handle the woodpeckers. Interesting.
It does.
Yeah. I asked that question for a reason. My wife's always wanted to know the answer, so she just got it. Well, Dorothy, you've been a treat. This has been a wonderful experience. What have we missed here? We missed anything important here today? I mean, she has like 3 pages of notes. She's very professional.
I didn't want to forget anything. I do want to talk a little bit about water quality.
Okay, let's talk about water quality.
Because in a couple ways, because that is such an important issue to department-wide. I mean, water quality, we manage so many lakes and streams and deal with protection of watersheds throughout Pennsylvania. But especially those from the local area who've been familiar with the park. Several years ago, there were some water quality issues in the lake. And if you haven't been out to the park recently, the lake is recovering from the problems that we had. The water is much clearer, and the native vegetation is growing back. And it's when the water quality was poor, we had an overgrowth of algae in the lake. And it caused the lake to look sort of brownish, and people were under the perception that it was dirty or there was something wrong with the water. And now, and it deterred people from swimming, or recreating on the lake.
It's kind of gooey anyway.
It doesn't look good. But I just want your listeners to know that the water quality in the lake's improving. We've got a lot more of the native vegetation growing. It uptakes, the native vegetation uptakes the nutrients, the nitrogen and the phosphorus that the algae was feeding on and caused the algae to proliferate. So the water is clearer. It's great for swimming. It's a beautiful place to kayak, canoe, fish. The fishing's coming back.
And this is all about the balance we always hear about.
It is.
You need to have the yin and the yang always together.
You absolutely do. The lake basically got out of balance. There was a change. We didn't the lake had been drawn down for some work on the bridges, and the near shore aquatic vegetation that is in the what would normally be shallow water was exposed when the lake was drawn down. The nearshore vegetation died off over two consecutive winters. When the water raised back up, you had more nitrogen and phosphorus in the lake because of the decaying plant matter. You don't have the normal aquatic vegetation to uptake the nutrients. Something else did it. The algae proliferated. The algae proliferated, caused the lake to look brownish. It also then prevents the sunlight from reaching down through several inches or a couple feet of water to allow the normal aquatic vegetation to grow.
Would that have settled itself over time? I mean, if you had just walked away from it over, say, 10 or 15 years, would it have settled out itself eventually?
I think we're seeing that a lot of the recovery of the lake is because the normal aquatic vegetation is growing back, and it's taking up the nitrogen and the phosphorus, and the balance is shifting back more to the normal vegetation and less of the algae.
Yeah. Boy, I could talk to you for ages about that. Yeah. But we're out of time. But I've enjoyed talking to you very much, and you're obviously a very knowledgeable person. It really has been a treat to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Our guest has been Dorothy Krupa. She is the manager of the Shawnee State Park and Blue Knob State Park, and it's been a delight to have her, and I want to thank you again and everyone at DCNR for letting me borrow you for about a half an hour or so. Bedford County Speaks was brought to you today by DestinationDelco.com and by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, where buying a car is always worry-free. If you'd like to hear today's program again, just visit BedfordCountySpeaks.com. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, have a great weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.